Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned to
Disorderly Conduct
with your host, Vincent the Bay.
Vince in 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 the Bay.
Hi there, honey. I'm number one-y.
Hi there, fella. I'd like to see you after the show.
In the gay or what? Vince in the gay or what?
Vince in the Bay.
Check, two, two, two.
Check.
shit.
Hey, it's Vince in the motherfucking Bay. Welcome to yet another edition of Disorderly Conduct. It's Sunday, October 27, 2013. Only 4 days away from Halloween. Are you guys going trick-or-treating? I hope you are. I think I'm going to be going trick-or-treating. I have some pals who are going to be in town for Halloween, and I'm looking forward to meeting up with my folks and trick-or-treating. It's going to be a good time. I want to thank everybody for joining me early on. We have the early chit-chatters in the chit-chat room. I'm talking about Absalom, Eternal Jimmies of the Spotless Russell, several guest listeners, Loki in the house. What up, Loki? Melissa 13. Hey, Melissa. We also have Nick Knack, Nika Absolution 1, Prison Reform Movement, Sicko, and Vert. What up, Vert? You were looking very much a diehard Broncos fan. I saw you on Tiny Chat, Vert, with your Tim Tebow jersey. And I don't know if the Broncos won or not, but it doesn't matter because the fucking Raiders won. Yeah, the Raiders were victorious today over the Steelers. And I'm really excited about Terrell Pryor. He seems to be coming along. He's a very raw talent, but man, dude, he's kind of like, in a way, like that Colin Kaepernick. Maybe like a year or two behind him in development, maybe. I don't know. But this guy's going to be something to mess with in the future. I think he's got a lot of potential. I think I might actually be giving the Raiders a shot at potentially making some noise. Who knows? Maybe if they keep this up, they can potentially make a run for a wild card or something. Who knows? I mean, they play in a pretty weak division. If they could just find a way to beat all their opponents in their division. Although KC looks pretty good. But it's whatever. Tonight, I'm excited about the show. This is going to be... I haven't done many broadcasts dedicated to local news stories. Of course, you know I'm Vince in the Bay, and I try to, you know, work in themes and topics and whatnot relating to the Bay Area, but it doesn't always work that way. And I'm excited to have a show tonight, kind of dedicated to the Bay Area. I'm really excited to have a guest with me tonight who's a journalist based here in the Bay Area, and he's been, he's kind of had his finger on the pulse of a lot of the major stories that are happening around the Bay Area, and I'm excited to have him here to walk us through some of those. I witnessed a lot of activity of his on Twitter. He's very, very active on Twitter. He's all over the map. He's following news items from all over the world. But he's also, like, I would say he more or less aggregates world news, and he kind of specializes in going after stories locally here. As of most recent, he was following the BART strikes that we were a week or two ago, and during the middle of that, there was an accident. Of course, the workers were on strike, but they were still doing maintenance on the tracks and stuff. And apparently, a couple of BART maintenance workers who were on the tracks doing work got hit by a moving train. Apparently, there's some miscommunication, and nobody was aware that these workers were on the tracks. And they were hit by a BART train. And so Matthew, he was following a lot of the scanner activity, the communications between the BART employees, and he was able to capture some of the radio chatter related to the incident. And I have a couple clips of that audio that I'll play a little bit later. And then, you know, of course, we're going to talk to Matthew about this and get his take on everything. He also, last week, related to this BART story, apparently Matthew had the audio that he ripped off of the scanner website or whatever. I forget the name of their website, but there's websites out there that scan radio communications of law enforcement and first responders and whatnot all over the world. And he obviously was monitoring these BART communications and was able to capture some, and he posted them on his SoundCloud. And it's my understanding that a local news outlet here, KTVU, I always screw that up, KTVU, reported the story, used audio that they got from Matthew Keyes's, I believe they got it from his SoundCloud, and they played it on one of their news reports and never cited the source. And this caused some extreme butthurt on the part of Matthew Keyes, and he decided to take to Twitter to protest and demand that they cite the source of their audio. Of course, obviously, he spent time and effort and work into getting together that audio, and I don't blame him. Of course, he wants to have credit where credit is due, and he then went to Twitter and complained to the Twitter account of the news station, which is KTVU, Channel 2 Fox News affiliate here, and he was met with some hostility. Granted, I think Matthew might have been a little bit over the top. Apparently, he had good reason to be upset. Apparently, he's got a history of issues with dealing with this news outlet, and he felt like he had no other recourse than to confront them on Twitter in a public timeline. And I saw that and was kind of, at my first reaction was like, you know, this doesn't seem very professional for two, a journalist and a news outlet to be squabbling about sources on an open public timeline. I kind of felt like it was something that they could have resolved behind the scenes. But according to Matthew, that just wasn't an option for him. And he was able to cause a little bit of a stink. And unfortunately, whoever was in charge of that Twitter account for KTVU, which I would assume is like an intern or some sort of dedicated social media person. And I don't know if cooler heads prevailed. I don't know if there was like somebody higher up that noticed what was going on. I don't know if maybe Matthew made a few phone calls to the station. Who knows? But within an hour, well, first of all, after they got into their little flame war on Twitter, I jumped in and I told the two parties. I said, hey, look, you guys should really just chill out. You know, let's work this out, you know, professionally, blah, blah, blah. And of course, Matthew like snapped at me and said, you know, this is not cool. You know, I have every right to be mad. You know, they snubbed me as a source and I deserve credit. And I have no argument there. I just felt like maybe he should have been a little bit more tactful, but apparently according to him, he's tried that and it hasn't worked. So he decided he was just going to go brute force on them. And so the KTVU account saw this and not only blocked Matthew Keys, but also blocked me, gave me a snarky little tweet saying something like, oh, you can always just block, like I just blocked you. So I got blocked by a news outlet. I wasn't even being mean. I was just saying, hey, you know, you guys should probably chill out. You know, we're all professional. You guys are all professionals here. Let's like be civil about this. They weren't having it. So they blocked me. They blocked Matthew. They blocked a bunch of other people that chimed in who were watching the thread. There's a Twitter account called the Sutro Tower. And that account got blocked too. So Matthew then launched into high gear. And eventually, I don't know if I don't know if cooler heads prevailed. I don't know if there was somebody other than who was originally operating that KTVU account, but somebody had a light bulb go off in their head and figured that they needed to make this go away. So they deleted their tweets and they unblocked everybody. And of course, that was a minor victory. And Matthew Keys, of course, was on top of it. He screenshot all these things, and then I just found out recently, was it yesterday or the day before? Matthew's got into it with another local reporter. So I don't know if this is kind of like his new crusade against holding local journalists to the fire. In some ways, I'm kind of behind him on this. You know, I honestly, there's a lot of news reporters out there that I think are clueless, sloppy, and really, really, really just are all about getting a story out there. They don't care if it's right or wrong. They just want to expedite it and get it out there so they can have the first scoop. And I kind of see what Matthew's doing as in some ways just trolling the media, which there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the media is fucking clueless on so many levels. I mean, just this week we had news outlets like Russia Today reporting that Russell League took down NSA.gov. Just because Russell League tweeted out, we took down NSA.gov, when they didn't really do it, apparently nobody took down NSA.gov. It was an internal server problem and that took it offline. And, of course, you got all these hackers and people who want to take credit for it and look like a badass. And what's sad is, some people do that on Twitter and say, oh, yeah, we knocked him offline, like Russell Lee claimed it. And sure enough, Russia Today runs a story about this, and their source of information is Russell League. One tweet from Russell League, one tweet from Truth is Sexy, And another tweet from Anonymous Downer, I think. I mean, we're talking about the least credible Twitter users you could ever tap into. And anybody who's on this scene and knows anything about those folks, you have to be pissing your pants that they were called on to be, like, sources, reliable sources, I guess. It's pathetic. But whatever, it is what it is. I'm really stoked about the show tonight. My guest is going to be Bay Area-based journalist Matthew Keyes. We will discuss several stories which have developed locally here over the past few weeks. Matthew has covered the accidental deaths of two BART maintenance workers there was an accident that happened, and this was during the recent workers' strike. Apparently, these workers were working on the track, and there was some sort of miscommunication. Train operators didn't realize that they were on the tracks that they were on, and they were hit and killed by a train. And so we'll talk to Matthew a little bit about that. Also, Matthew has been covering this recent incident in Roseville, where a parolee engaged in a shootout with police. Luckily, no one was killed. But we'll examine that a little bit. Also, like I said, Matthew has been mixing it up on Twitter with local news outlets about their news coverage. And, of course, at one point getting blocked by KTVU's account for complaining about not being credited as their source of the audio that they reported with. Also, we are going to celebrate the life of Lou Reed. That's right. Rest in peace, Lou Reed. We had our good friend of Velvet Underground fame pass away today at the age of 71. So we're going to tip our hat to him by playing some of his tunes during the breaks. And I think I'm going to go into a break right now and come back, hopefully, with my guest tonight, Matthew Keyes. Matthew, if you're on the line, I see a lot of people in my switchboard in queue, but not very many people have pressed 1. Matthew, if you are in there, queued up, ready to go, if you could press the number 1 on your keypad, press the number 1 on your keypad, and that will alert me that you want to be put on the radio, on the air, and we'll rock and roll. This is going to be fun. I'm excited. Really stoked to get to meet Matthew here and hear about everything that he's following here in the Bay Area. And I think we'll also be visited later by Sicko, who is also Bay Area based, a Bay Area based activist. Let's see what he might chime in on. So there you have it. We'll be playing some audio clips of some of these dispatches related to the BART incident, and we'll also have live phone sex. It's going to be a group orgy in the second hour, so I hope everybody brought plenty of lube. There you have it. Okay, so this is what we're going to do here. I'm going to play my first track by Lou Reed for the night. This is one of my favorite songs. It's by Lou Reed. It's not by the Velvet Underground. This came out, about 15 years ago. Oh, Jesus, almost 20 years ago now. But this song is entitled Dirty Boulevard by Lou Reed. And we're going to check it out. I'm going to jump into the screening room, screen calls, hopefully find Matthew, and I'll be right back with Matthew right here on Disorderly Conduct, Blog Talk Radio with your host, yours truly, your audio erotic host for the next 2 hours, Vince and Le Bay. And so we will be right back after these messages from Lou Reed.
Pedro lives out of the Wilshire Hotel. He looks out a window without glass. The walls are made of cardboard. Newspapers on his feet, and his father beats him because he's too tired to beg. He's got 9 brothers and sisters. They're brought up on their knees. It's hard to run when a coat hanger beats you on the thighs. Pedro dreams of being older and killing the old man, but that's a slim chance. He's going to the boulevard. He's gonna end up on the dirty boulevard. He's going out to the dirty boulevard. He's going down to the dirty boulevard. $2,000 a month, you can believe it, man, it's true. Somewhere a landlord's laughing till he wets his pants. No one dreams of being a doctor or a lawyer or anything. They dream of dealing on the dirty boulevard. Give me your hungry, you're tired, you're poor, I'll piss on them. That's what the statue of bigotry says. Your poor huddled masses, let's club them to death and get it over with and just dump them on the boulevard. Get him out on the dirty boulevard. Going out to the dirty boulevard. They're going down on the dirty boulevard. Going out. Outside, it's a bright night. There's an opera at Lincoln Center. Movie stars arrive by limousine. The Klieg lights shoot up over the skyline of Manhattan, but the lights are out on the main streets. A small kid stands by the Lincoln Tunnel. He's selling plastic roses for a buck. The traffic's backed up to 39th Street. The TV whores are calling the cops out for a suck. And back at the wheelchair, Pedro sits there dreaming. He's found a book on magic in a garbage can. He looks at the pictures and stares up at the cracked ceiling. Count of 3 says, I hope I can disappear and fly, fly away from this dirty boulevard. I want to fly, yeah, from the dirty boulevard. I want to fly from the dirty boulevard. I want to fly, 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 fly from the dirty boulevard. I want to fly away. I want to fly, fly, fly away, yeah. I want to fly, fly, fly away.
Fly, fly, fly away.
Fly, fly,
fly, fly, fly, fly away.
Fly, fly away, yeah.
Fly, fly, fly,
fly
away.
Fly,
fly, fly away. I want to fly, 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 fly away. Fly, fly away.
You're tuned to Disorderly Conduct with your host, Vince in the Bay. Call in now, biatches, 347-826-7667. And now, back to the show.
For the nigga who be talking loud and holding his dick, talking shit, he better lay low. For the bitch that said I got some shit up out of my dick, now she's sick, she better lay low. For the niggas who be claiming my hood and really ain't for my gang, lay low. I hope he don't be thinking I'm just talking and I won't do a thing. Really hope so.
Oh, motherfucking Jaya. Y'all already know what it is. It's VITB back up in this. Absolutely excited for tonight's show. I love it when I have... I love to talk about news. I'm a newsie. I really am. I love social media because it keeps me connected to the news and the news cycle. This 24-second news cycle that we're living in now. And I love talking to reporters and journalists, like real journalists, too. Like people that are just out there for facts. They're not loyal to, a political party or ideology. They're just out there looking for the facts and reporting them. You know, people like, you know, like this guy, Michael Hastings, who I would imagine if I were to get into an intellectual or political debate with him, I'd probably disagree with him on a shit ton of stuff. But I have to hand it to him, man. He goes after everybody with, well, he did, rest in peace, Michael Hastings. He went after his subjects and his subject matter with just fearless determination, with no bias at all. He was just looking for the truth. I felt like he was kind of a journalist that really believed that his mission was to report the truth to the people. That's it. And whether that truth hurt or not, it had to be put out there. A lot of people get pissed off when you tell them the truth and they tell you, oh, that's just your opinion, though. No, it's not an opinion. It's an observation, dude. And so following Matthew Keyes on Twitter lately has kind of reminded me of that same spirit. I'm hoping to learn a lot about Matthew and what he's all about tonight, because I kind of feel, just by from following him on Twitter, I kind of feel like he's in that same sort of mode as a Michael Hastings was. You know, he seems very, very focused, determined, and obsessed with, you know, an angle on a story. If he feels like he's got the goods on someone, or if he just, you know, he's caught somebody red-handed or with their pants down, and they don't want to admit it, you know, you hold their feet to the fire. And I think that's what journalism's all about, man. And journalism, in many ways, is borderline trolling. You're essentially trolling people with the truth. Whereas trolling on the internet, you're making shit out of, you're pulling shit out of your ass. But when journalists troll, they're just trolling with the facts, baby. And a lot of people don't fucking like that. Case in point, Ron Briner. The entire internet hates him. You know why? Because he tells them the truth, and the truth hurts. People are too sensitive right now. People are hypersensitive right now. You know, I had somebody last night on Twitter essentially break up with me as a friend because we had a disagreement on something. Because I made a tweet that was probably not worded the way it should have been, and it obviously got misinterpreted. But come on, we're friends. We give people the benefit of the doubt. We agree to disagree. I swear to God, if you're waiting for if you're waiting to surround yourself with friends that agree with you on over 9,000% of the time, good luck. Good luck finding somebody that's going to just agree with every single thing you say or think or do. It's not how it works. That's what makes us different. That's the beauty of differences. And people just take things personally, and it's just, oh, I hate it. But when I watch, like, Matthew's tweets and stuff, I don't see somebody going after people personally. I think he's just going after people with the facts and, the rules, whatever you want to you know, he's just calling people out on their bullshit. And I've noticed him do it twice this week on Twitter with news organizations. And I'm excited to talk to him about this tonight and get his perspective on this and the other stories he's been covering. So without any further ado, I'm going to welcome to the program Matthew Keyes. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being here. I'm really, really glad you made it. So you heard me ramble on a little bit there. What are your thoughts on the various things I touched on?
You know, as far as journalism and trolling for the truth, I can see where that would be the perspective that readers and viewers and listeners might take. The way that I've always tried to explain it to people is when you're a reporter, you are giving people the news that they want to hear. You know, if there's a shooting in your neighborhood, you want the news to cover it. You want to find out what's going on, or if there's an accident or a gas leak or whatever. Journalism is giving people information that they need to know. And sometimes it's information that they want to hear, and sometimes it's information that they don't. A good case in point is this: these Edward Snowden leaks. You know, nobody wants to hear that your government is engaging in domestic and international surveillance on that kind of level. But it's information that people need to know so that they can make informed decisions about whether or not these programs are beneficial, if these are the people that we want, representing us in government. And had it not been for somebody who some people consider to be a whistleblower and some people don't, and had it not been for some very courageous people that decided to file these stories in newspapers, that's information that never would have come to light. And that's the difference between somebody who's a reporter, somebody who's giving you information about stuff you want to find out, and a journalist who's giving you information that you need to know so that you can make informed decisions and be better informed about what's going on in your world. Does that make sense? I can't hear anything, so I don't know if I'm coming through or not.
Fuck, dude, my bad. I was muted. I was talking to you and you couldn't even hear me. But I think that's interesting. I never thought of it like that. I always thought of reporters as sort of under the umbrella of journalists, but you're postulating that reporters and journalists are two different things that are related. And
I think all journalists are reporters, but I'm not sure all reporters are journalists in the sense that, you know, reporters are doing their job if they get a press release from the police department and they pass that on to the viewer. You know, you need people who are conduits of information between people that are hard to get access to and the general public. And that's what a reporter does. But what a journalist does is, you know, they report, they don't take it for face value. They question whether or not what's being said is true, and they make that apparent to their audience. You know, you can do that without having an opinion. It's really hard to do. And you know, we have journalists now that are more columnists, more people that deliver opinion that don't try to mask the fact that they have an opinion. You know, Glenn Greenwald is a great example of a journalist who, you know, doesn't subscribe to the idea that in order to be an effective journalist, to be somebody who contributes to the record of history, you have to not have an opinion. You know, he looks at it as, I'm a human being and I've got opinions about this, and obviously my editorial decisions are going to be based on things that interest me and things that I have strong opinions about. And that's fine. I think there's a place for that. You know, given the advent of broadcasting and the internet, there's a place for that. And viewers can decide if they want to get news that they want to hear about or if they want to get news to feel informed. But that's always been my perspective, and I try to be the kind of journalist that takes an objective look at something. But when I go to a subject like, you know, somebody at the Fox affiliate there when I was covering the Asiana crash, or the NTSB, or, you know, somebody at YouTube, approach them with this kind of attitude that I think some reporters have of, you know, that they try to play that game of gotcha. You know, nobody wants to be approached in that way. People want to be approached with respect and as people. And so even in the tiffs that you may have seen I had with KTVU earlier this week and with a reporter at the Sacramento Fox affiliate yesterday, those all started out as, you know, being just very basic conversations that escalated because they were caught in something. And I'm sure that's something that you'd like to talk about tonight.
Absolutely, as soon as I unmute myself. No, absolutely, dude. I saw that play out, and honestly, when I first saw it happen, I was like, dude, what are these two idiots doing? They're fucking professional journalists. This should be happening offline. Come on. Now, granted, at that point, I didn't know your history with them. I realize now that you had, you know, this was kind of like, hey, they're not responding. I'm going public on Twitter then. I get it now. But at the time, I was just kind of like, dude, this isn't cool, man. You guys should probably be, like, squabbling in DMs or something. And you snap back at me, too. You're like, dude, I'm totally right, man. They owe me, you know, credit for being the source of the audio, which is totally true. They should. I mean, how hard is it to put a little graphic in the corner that says provided courtesy of Matthew Keys, you know? But whatever, you know, they failed, and then they couldn't admit, or just at least, even if they thought that they were in the right from a PR standpoint, they could have just, you know, in their mind, you know, humored you and say, okay, fine, yeah, we admit, we got it from you, so yeah, we'll change it. And I think they did change it, didn't they?
I think they changed their approach as to how they handled the situation, but you know, let me back up and explain.
Okay. Yeah,
what happened a few nights ago. KTVU is, for your listeners who may not be in the Bay Area, is the Fox affiliate out of Oakland. They cover all of the San Francisco Bay, which is the sixth largest television market in the country. And your listeners may remember them. They are the station that goofed on the pilot names when the plane crashed at San Francisco about 4 months ago. And so that's kind of how people know them. But if you've lived in the Bay Area, you know them as being a very reputable news organization. They are, you know, I used to work in the Bay Area. They were some of our biggest competition. They have consistently dominated the ratings in local news for about 50 years, which is something that you just can't find anywhere else. They're what we call a legacy television station. And they, you know, for the longest time have had really high standards of journalism, which is very hard to find on TV news these days, and they're starting to let those standards slip. And it started with the Asiana thing, and now we've seen it, you know, on a lesser scale play out to what happened on Twitter. But here's what happened with that. In the course of covering the incident that happened last Saturday with these BART workers, these two BART workers that were struck by a train while union BART workers were on strike, I had posted some dispatch audio that I had obtained from an individual who doesn't want to be named but is works closely with BART. And when I upload audio to SoundCloud, which is the sort of a YouTube for audio, I insert frequencies that the human ear can't hear, but they can be picked up if you run it through a program like GarageBand or Audacity. They just show up as audio waves. And I do that because I like to see who's using the material that I post. When you re-record that material, those audio waves pick up, and people record it, and they don't know that it's there because they can't hear it, but it shows up on a computer. You know, I like to think of it as a digital signature. But when I post scanner traffic, I know people are going to use it. And oftentimes, I don't care if they take it from, you know, SoundCloud. I'm putting it up there so that people can be informed, and I'm doing it for free. I'm not getting paid to do it. You know, I don't charge for people to record or download it. And frankly, scanner traffic is in the public domain. It's using public airwaves, so anybody can listen to it, anybody has access to it, and anybody can use it. You know, the issue that I had with KTVU is they sent me a tweet saying that there was a portion of the audio that was posted that was not relevant to the strike, which I knew because I didn't edit the audio. And I had a disclaimer on the audio saying that there were certain dispatches that were not related to the incident. But evidently they felt it was a big enough issue that they sent a tweet about it. And I said, okay, well, you know, I'll review it, but how do you know it's not relevant? Who's telling you this? And they fired back with a tweet saying that it was a source that they had spoken with. They had spoken with several sources close to the investigation, and that it would be on their newscast later in the night. And I said, okay, well, I didn't change it because I wanted to see what they had insofar as what was in their report. And so I can't pick up KTVU where I live, but I was able to watch it online. And I watched a good 10 minutes of their stuff and noticed that they had used audio that I had posted earlier in the day. And anytime I monitor media, I tend to record it so that I can go back and listen to it in case I've missed something, or I can reuse it on SoundCloud or YouTube or wherever if it becomes a bigger story. And I noticed that part of the audio that they had broadcast had that same frequency signature that the recordings had that I put in those recordings. So that's how I knew that they took my stuff. And I didn't make too big of an issue out of it, but I sent a follow-up tweet saying, I watched your report, and there was nothing in your report saying that the audio that's been posted to SoundCloud isn't accurate. So who are your sources? And they wouldn't answer the question. So, you know, that's when I kind of pressed the issue of, you know, you're telling me that it's wrong, but you're not explaining to me why it's wrong. And if it was something like, if we were rival news organizations and you're saying that I'm wrong, it's one thing not to name sources, but when you're putting it out there in the public forum and you're saying it's wrong, you have an obligation not just to the person you're saying is wrong, but to the greater public in general to explain why it's wrong. They could have said,
yeah,
again,
I think that's their bad for putting it out in the public to begin with. I think you're totally justified with attacking them on that, too. And I mean, continue with the story, but I thought it was brilliant. I loved it. That's partly why I jumped in. But go ahead. Continue.
So that's really what the issue was. It wasn't so much the audio being used without credit. This is audio that you can find on various other websites. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Broadcastify if you know where to look. And I asked them, I said, later on they told me, and we know this to be erroneous, but they told me they got it from Radio Reference, which isn't even called Radio Reference anymore. They told me essentially they had gotten it from Broadcastify. And I said, okay, well, when were these dispatches put out? Because I can tell you exactly at what time those dispatches were put out. So at what time were they put out? And they wouldn't answer. And I think we know why they wouldn't answer. So the issue was not so much that they took material and didn't credit, although they did. And when you take material and you don't credit, you're doing a disservice not only to the people who put time and effort and labor into that material, you're doing a disservice to the general public. And that's really what upsets me more than anything, is when journalists, you know, when journalists forget that they're doing a public service first and they're doing news as a business second. You know, I don't think it's okay for any news organization to take another person's material, not credit, and use it to prop up their own product for profit, which is essentially what you have news organizations doing now. They feel they can take from YouTube or SoundCloud or blogs or Reddit and not source back because it's on the Internet. Well, the Internet is not a copyright-free playground that news organizations can just take from. You know, at the very least, you should ask for permission. You should cite where you got it from because it's not your material. So, you know, that was sort of the bigger issue, and that's why I made such a fuss about it. And I only really made a fuss about it when they started blocking people who were calling them out on it. As a news organization, you don't want to block people who are providing you with public criticism. Public criticism should be what you thrive on. If they're telling you how to make your product better, and if you make a mistake, the best approach is to apologize, remedy it, and move on. But that's not quite what they did. You saw the approach that they took. They blocked you. They blocked me. They blocked a couple of other people. And I think
they blocked the poor Sutro Tower. It's just a tower. Like, if that tower didn't exist, they couldn't broadcast.
Yeah, that's right.
How dare they? Everybody, if anything, everybody should follow the Sutro Tower. I mean, if it's not for them, we don't see any of this shit.
I don't even follow the Stitcher Tower. I didn't know it was on Twitter, but that's interesting. You know, news organizations should thrive on public comment and public criticism. I mean, that's the litmus test for figuring out if you're doing your job, if your public is informed. If you know, there's no reason not to cite where you got a piece of media from, other than you're trying to prop up your product. And unfortunately, you know, we've seen news organizations kind of forget that they're providing a public service, and that they're, you know, their focus is more on news as a business. And thankfully, there are still journalists out there that remember that they're committing a public service. They're committing acts of journalism to better, the infosphere, I guess, for lack of a better word. And I think it's becoming very apparent to people that follow the news, like you and me and like your audience, which news organizations are doing it to inform and which news organizations are doing it as a business. And it's sad to see television journalism going the way of people that produce news as a business. It's some of the most influential – it's one of the most influential mediums we have, you know, even more so than the Internet. The Internet's starting to get up there, but TV news is still where most people go to get their news here. And it's just disappointing to see kind of reputation and that kind of trust being misappropriated. So that's my position on the KTVU thing. This Fox thing that happened yesterday with this local Fox reporter, she had tweeted a promo claiming that a little bit of a backstory here. There was a big situation out in a town called Roseville in Sacramento, near Sacramento, with this parolee who shot at a couple of police officers and then barricaded himself in a house. It all ended peacefully. He came out at about midnight the next day, surrendered to police for that incident, was taken into custody. He's now at a hospital being checked out. But all of the news organizations wanted to interview his family, who had shown up at the scene to try and talk him out of this house. And this news organization, KOVR, had an interview with his aunt. His aunt's name is Donna Sandoval. And the family's position is that this guy never shot at a police officer, that one cop shot the other cop's partner first. They apparently have this on video, but nobody has seen this video. And that this guy is completely innocent. He was just minding his own business, and that police sort of egged him on into running from them and taking refuge inside this house. So the next day, another news organization, this Fox News organization, said they had an interview with this aunt who was speaking out. And that's how they teased it on Twitter. And I pointed out to the reporter that promoted it that way that, you know, that's not quite accurate. She spoke out on another news organization yesterday. She gave you an interview. There's a difference. It infers exclusivity. And to be completely fair, it was a total argument of semantics. And it probably wasn't even worth responding to, you know. And looking back on it, I really probably shouldn't have said anything. It doesn't make a difference. But she evidently was offended to the point where she decided to respond by asking me what my point was and saying that, you know, they didn't have the interview yesterday, so they were going to run it on their news station that night. And I said, well, here's why I brought it up. You know, when you say that somebody is speaking out, you're inferring that they gave you an exclusive interview. And really, they spoke with somebody who was on a different station yesterday, so you're promoting it erroneously. And, you know, long story short, we got into it back and forth. It ended with her telling me to basically mind my own business. And again, it goes back to the idea of, you know, I'm a colleague to a lot of these people, but I'm also a viewer. And, you know, when a viewer provides you with feedback and criticism, you don't respond by pushing them away. You don't have to respond every time, especially if they're being a jerk, which I think she thought I was being. And I can definitely see her perspective on that. But you don't push people away when they're trying to give you feedback, when you're supposed to be performing a public service.
Pointing a new term, bro. I've got a new term. It's called "You've Just Been Keezed."
Oh, really? Is that good?
That's awesome. No, dude, I just, it's going to be like one of those things where like, dude, I totally keezed this MSNBC reporter. Fucking pwned him, dude. Straight up keezed him.
I mean, your goal should not be to, you know, call people out for the sake of calling people out. You know, just
I know, off, but sometimes you got to do it, though. Sometimes you have no choice.
Well, there's something to be said about holding journalists accountable. I mean, many of these journalists, you know, again, many of these people who are on TV are not journalists. They're reporters. And that's fine. You know, there's a need for having, like I said earlier, there's a need for having people that have access to people that the general public doesn't have and act as a conduit of information. So I'm not putting down people that are reporters that don't engage in acts of journalism. What I am saying is that there's a difference. And when you go around as a saying that you're a journalist, you're misrepresenting yourself. You know, you're not a journalist. You're somebody that just moves information from one place to another. That's not journalism. Journalism is digging deeper. It's giving people the information that they need to know, and it's being accurate. You know, I think reporters don't necessarily need to be accurate if they're moving information that was given to them by somebody else. They should have a duty to go back and correct it if they're wrong, but I think they're held to a lower standard than journalists. So, but everybody needs to be held accountable when you have the trust of the public in your hands, as government officials do, as journalists do. Sometimes it's celebrities do, although I think celebrities, that trust is misplaced.
Oh, my God. You know who really pisses me off? John Cusack. John Cusack. I hate that guy on Twitter. I love his film. Go ahead.
I know he's a kind of an advocate on Twitter for various causes, but I can't say I follow him.
He has totally bought the whole WikiLeaks thing, hook, line, and sinker, dude. He's like a fucking Julian Assange fanboy. He's one of these socialites that are out there propping up all these assholes, while, you know, people who are less fortunate are paying the price, but whatever. That's a different show. Yeah. Dude, I want to bring on somebody now who I think might have something he might want to interject or ask you. He's an old friend of my show. It's Sicko. He's Bay Area based as well. Welcome, Sicko.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're there. Hello. You sound great.
Okay,
up? Cool. You're on with Matthew. Cool.
Not much. There was something I've been wanting to say for about 20 minutes now, but then when my mic wasn't working, I had to go fix it and it completely fucking...
Oh, that's right. What did you want to say?
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't remember anymore. Because I had to go fix my mic and all that shit. And you know me, I'm kind of simple minded.
We were talking about KTVU. We were talking about journalism in general, sources, Twitter battles.
I don't really watch a whole lot of Bay Area local news now. But like back during the Occupy days, and even like during the Op BART days and stuff, I definitely consumed a lot of the media out here. And Matthew, one of the things that it was really common for any of these SFGate or any of these other media organizations to grab stream videos or pictures and stuff taken by activists and not credit them, and present it as if it was their own video and shit. And I can remember easily fucking a dozen times of people happen to go after one of the organizations to get credit for their work. So it definitely seems to be a common practice here in the Bay. Probably, I bet it's pretty common worldwide, or at least nationwide these days.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, I hate for this to sound as an excuse, but it is reality. A lot of it has to do with the fact that news organizations, especially in broadcast, for the longest time rejected the notion that the Internet was a place where news could be made, where you could find eyewitness photos and eyewitness videos. And social media really changed a lot of that. But what you're seeing, you know, and I remember covering Occupy Oakland and Occupy SF. I worked in the Bay Area in 2011 when a lot of that went down before I moved to New York. And, you know, so I know exactly what you're talking about, and I saw a lot of that too. And the reason why that happens is because you've got people who are producers and who are reporters that take that material and know that material can enhance their story, but don't quite understand the concept that, again, it goes back to the idea of journalists thinking that the internet is their playground. And it's not. But here's what happens if you find that you're the victim of having your material lifted. A lot of people don't know that if they see their photos, their videos, their audio used in print or on broadcast or even online, even if they credit you, you can still send an invoice to that news organization and say, you used my material that I have copyright to. And everybody has inherent copyright when they take a picture of a photo or they take video or they record a piece of audio. Unless they give like a Creative Commons license or they say it's in the public domain, everybody's got inherent copyright to that material. You can send an invoice to that news organization and say, you used 15 seconds of my video, and I can prove that it's my video, and so here's an invoice for $100. I want to be reimbursed for that.
And no, not... Go ahead.
Argument of, you know what, I'm taking this video, and I don't want to get paid for it. Fine, but you should still send that invoice, and what you do with that money when the news organization pays you out, because that's going to send the message to the news organization that they can't just rip off your stuff. They can't just take people's content and not compensate them for that. What you do with that money when they pay you is you donate it to charity. So you're not producing material to necessarily for profit, but you are still at least being compensated for the work that you're putting into live streaming or uploading video to YouTube or taking a picture and putting it on Reddit.
That's really
the only way these news organizations are going to learn that they can't lift material from the internet.
I'm pretty anti-copyright, but at the same time, KTVV or whatever, or VU, they own by Fox. Fox is pretty they're pretty quick to fight against the free to internet sponsors and stuff. Big companies like that are pretty quick to sue the little guy for pirating their shit. So I have no problem with the little guy going, hey, look, man, you took my shit without asking. Give me it, Give me some money, Aside from that, I'm pretty anti-copyright, but I'm all about giving them a piece of their own medicine.
Yeah, and you can be anti-copyright and say, I don't think there's anything – what copyright is supposed to do is it's supposed to protect people that create material. It's supposed to be an incentive for people that create media to be reimbursed for their effort. But you can be anti-copyright and still play by the copyright rules because you know who's going to are those big news – are those big media organizations that you just named, whether it's Fox, which I should clarify, Fox doesn't actually own KTVU. They're just an affiliate. But whether it's Disney, who owns, Channel 7 in the Bay Area, or whether it's CBS, who owns 5, or whether it's, Young Broadcasting, that owns Cron, or the San Francisco Chronicle, these are all news organizations that would gladly take any activist to court if they think that their material is being misrepresented for a political purpose and they're not getting compensated for it. But at the same time, they're taking user-generated content from the internet and saying, well, it's fair use. And in a lot of those cases, it's not fair use. You are, you do have a case to say, I'm anti-copyright, but since these are the rules we have to play by, you need to compensate me for my material.
And it's common practice that a lot of these copyright trolls are hypocritical in their in the way they go about things. Take DDoS, for example. How many activists right now in the United States are under indictment for a DDoS attack? And how many times have these copyright trolls paid to have the Pirate Bay DDoS and other file sharing sites and stuff? So, yeah, it's common practice. They're quite hypocritical in this shit.
Yeah. I had an issue with KTVU back in July with the Asiana pilot goof where,
that was hilarious.
Yeah, I had video of this goof and put it on YouTube and tweeted it out, and the next thing it's spread like wildfire. BuzzFeed has picked it up, and the Post has picked it up, and LA Times is doing something on it, and every Bay Area news station except for KTVU has something on it, with the exception of perhaps their apology. And about 2 weeks later, I get these notices from YouTube saying they're removing my material on grounds of copyright. And I was one of the few people that fought it on the grounds of fair use. So, you know, the copyright code can have a lot of really crappy things in it that would prevent somebody from, you know, for example, you're supposed to be allowed to make copy of media that you have a license to, like a videotape, for private home use. But it doesn't really tell you what that private home use is. So people have gone to court over it. But there are provisions in the copyright code like fair use, where if you can use a piece of media for purposes of educating people and informing people without necessarily having to compensate them because of copyright, which is what a lot of these news organizations, when they take streaming material from the Occupy protest or photos from the Occupy protest, that's what a lot of them claim, is, oh, it's fair use. Except that in that case, it's not, because fair use only applies if that media is the only way that a news organization can enhance their story, can really tell their story as to what happened. So, for example, if you have the only picture of a plane crash and you tweet it out, another news organization can say, that's the only picture of this plane crash that's out there, so we can use it on the grounds of fair use. They should still cite you, and they should still pay you, but they can definitely say they're not going to do either on the grounds of fair use. That doesn't apply with the Occupy things because, as you know, I don't know if you were out there, but if you were out there, you would have seen that every news organization was out there. They all got their own video and their own interviews. They all had their own helicopters up. So that argument of fair use doesn't apply. It applies in very specific situations, like that kid that got hit with the gas can. If there was video of that out there, then for purposes of that story only, you could use that video and not cite. But you can't just take somebody's stream that's being broadcast on Ustream or Justin TV or Livestream or whatever these streaming portals are. You can't just take somebody's stream, run it on your own website, you know, and that's it. That's not fair use. You can be compensated for that, and you should be compensated for that. I think that's the only way that these news organizations are going to know that they can't take material off the Internet without citation and without compensating people. It's a problem. It's going to take a while before we get there.
That made me think of the – I don't know if you know who Greg House is, and I know Vince – probably read it. Greg House put up a post earlier today talking about how people how we're supposed to be keeping the media honest, so that way the media can keep the government honest, and that's very much true, and I think that's part of what's gone on in the last 15 or 20 years and how things have gotten to the point where they've gotten, where, you know, when it comes to propaganda being passed off as legitimate news and bald-faced lies being passed off as truth. And it's because people stopped keeping the media honest. They either stopped listening, or they started taking it over, or they started believing everything they said without looking into anything. So I think just little things like that, you know, telling a news organization, hey, you have to give me credit for the information you took from me. You have to compensate me for that. Stuff like that, if the people could get back to doing stuff like that, could probably help turn some news organizations around, albeit, you know, you're not always gonna, but there's no help for you know, Fox News or MSNBC or CNN, but some of these other media organizations could probably be turned into honest, legitimate organizations if given a little bit of pressure from the people.
What's going to happen, you know, and we're getting within a couple of years of this, I think, is somebody's going to sue. Somebody's going to say, you know, this isn't fair use. You had your own material. You lifted my material and you didn't cite. And, you know, so somebody who does, you know, value the copyright code, who, you know, may not necessarily be an activist or may not, you know, may just be like a grandma out in Nebraska somewhere who takes an interesting photo and finds that it's been reused on BuzzFeed or the Huffington Post without any credit to her. She's going to say, you know, You didn't cite your source, and you didn't compensate me for this, and you're making a ton of money off of impressions and ads. I'm taking you to court. I should get some of that. And that you know, that's going to be the wake-up call for all of these news organizations. It's like, oh, shit, like, people realize that they can be compensated for their material. We can't just take stuff from Twitter or Facebook. And there are editors who legitimately think that newspaper editors and TV producers who legitimately think that when somebody uploads a photo to Facebook, it's fair game. And it's not. And so that's what's going to happen. You're going to have a few people who write into the TV stations and say, you need to cite me and you need to compensate me. But what's going to be the game changer is when people start suing and it winds up becoming something that goes to litigation. That's going to be the only way that this is going to change. Yeah, the other exception is if news organizations just stop using material from the Internet. But we've kind of already opened, you know, that can of worms, and it's going to be kind of hard to close that bottle. So I don't think we're ever going to get to that point.
And I will give everybody except for RT a little bit of credit when it comes to information they use from the Internet. Most of them, at least they're not all falling for trolls, obvious disinformation like anonymous owner and Truth Is Anal saying that they took down fucking NSA.gov or Russell League saying they took down NSA.gov. Most media organizations are pretty good about not falling into that. So I don't know if I'd tell them to quit using information from the Internet, but I would tell them, hey, it'd be nice if you fucking compensated people for it, because a lot of these people that you're taking information from are most of them are broke. Most of them could use, you know, $50 to help them pay for dinner. You know what I mean? So don't just steal people's shit like that. Like, not and then
you know,
turn around and say
and
that it's not cool for other people to steal your shit.
And to give you an idea as to how bad it's gotten, you know, we've dived into this issue of news organizations, and you know, it's not just news organizations as in TV and radio and print, but there's a lot of digital media companies that are starting to scrape from the Internet also. We've dived into them taking from people, but what a lot of people don't realize is there's a lot of news organizations taking from other news organizations. If you look at, I have friends that work at all of these places, so I feel comfortable naming them because I know they're not going to take it as a slam. But if you work at, you know, if you look at BuzzFeed or the Huffington Post, you look at The Blaze, you look at RT, even some of the papers now, the Washington Post, the New York Times, they engage in what's called content scraping, where they take Gawker's really bad at this too, where they take content that appears in other news organizations where that organization has gone out and done the work, and they sort of condense it. They excerpt it, and then they link back to it. And the link in these articles are like one or two words long. If you look at, I write for a website called The Desk. That's the site that I put up, and hopefully I'll have some people writing for it soon. But if you look at the blog post that I put up, you know, I do a little bit of attribution as well, a little bit of scraping as well. You know, never was that more prominent than during the Asiana thing. But when I link out to a news organization, it's in two places. It's in the body of the article, and it's not one or two words. It's usually almost a whole sentence that's linked out. So it's very, very apparent that that's a link, that you can go there to get more information. And it's at the bottom of every article. So if there's a link out to another news organization, they're all cited at the bottom of the article. And I'm hoping that news organizations really start to look at when they take content that is wholly produced by another publication, that they really start to look at how they're citing those sources. You know, Circa did this great – there's a mobile app called Circa, which is basically, you know, they don't do any original journalism. They just produce they basically aggregate from other places. And it's a great resource if you don't have a whole lot of time but you want to feel informed. What they used to do is they used to cite all of their sources at the very bottom. And it was very visible. You could see where all of their information was coming from. And when they updated their app and their site recently, they made it so that by default that part is hidden. And I think it's doing a great disservice to people that are, you know, to journalists and even, you know, to reporters that are going out there, that are pounding the pavement, that are producing the bulk of the content, the bulk of the media, and the bulk of the stories, only to find that their material is taken and put somewhere else. There was a guy, I think he wrote for The Atlantic, who recently called BuzzFeed out for that, and he said, look, BuzzFeed basically condensed my entire story into a post and gave me a short link.
Dude, don't even get me started on BuzzFeed, dude.
You know,
those guys are trolls posing as journalists.
Some of their staff.
Yeah.
But you know, to be fair to BuzzFeed, they're one of the few organizations that they're successful because they scrape content. You know, most of the content that does really well on their site is found elsewhere. But they are one of the few news organizations that I think – I shouldn't say news organization. They're a content portal that happens to do news. I think they're one of the few, digital services that are really trying – to reinvigorate investigative news. The problem is that they're not playing it as high as, 26 photos of dogs swimming. So, I have mixed feelings about BuzzFeed myself. They're good on some parts, they're bad on other parts. But as far as content scraping goes, they're getting millions of hits for posts that are essentially rehashes of articles that are found elsewhere.
Yeah, they're like a glorified Reddit, dude.
Yeah, except Reddit links back to the source.
Yeah, thank you. But again, that comes back to Michael Hastings, who I'm still not convinced we have the whole story about him. But he was joining BuzzFeed, and that's what he was out in L.A. for, to help set up their L.A. bureau. And it seems to me that was a sign that they were going in a direction of where, like, because that's a lot. It's hard to get a news organization up and running. I think most of them always start off as just aggregating other sources. But I think all of them have the goal of, like, we're going to do this all in-house eventually. And I think that was kind of, at least from an outside point of view, I think that was a step in the direction of, like, hey, we're going to bring on the most badass investigative reporter out there right now and get him, involved. And I really want to know more about, where they were going with him, what kind of reporting he was doing. And I'm really curious about what he was working on at the time of his death. Have you paid attention to that at all?
His friend, I think his friend was named Joe Biggs, who leaked
been on my show. I've had Joe on the show.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, I spoke with him right after he gave that email out to KTLA where Hastings, Hastings emailed three of his bosses. And I think I'm the only one to date that has named all three of the bosses that were in that email. But he emailed his bosses saying, I think I'm being followed and something doesn't quite seem right. And I got to drop off the grid for a few days. So I'm just letting you guys kind of know that this is what's going on. And by the way, you might be getting some phone calls from, some federal agents about me. So heads up. When you see an email like that, I mean, your first thought is to think, something else happened. It wasn't just this guy who, was speeding down a boulevard at 1 a.m. and happened to crash into a tree. It's really hard to tell. I don't like to engage in speculation. I just like to go to people and say, what do you think happened? And then kind of be that conduit of information. In that case, I'm acting as a reporter. I don't know what happened. And, I think it's going to be very hard to figure out what happened. And I think it's going to be even harder, when whatever truth comes out, to have people, believe it. If he wasn't being pursued by federal agents, I don't think I don't think that's a truth that people are ever going to accept, because there are so many theories about what happened that you're always going to have somebody say, he was definitely being pursued, even if that wasn't the case. If that was the case, I think it's going to be a very long time before we hear about it, given how stuff like that gets so buried, as far as our government, as far as news organizations, it's going to be a very long time. And I don't think we're going to hear about it for a while. So, the downside to that is that people come up with their own ideas as to what happened. And that's why it's so important that in government, in journalism, we have sort of a level of transparency. You've got to be so transparent with people, because it's it's just as easy to lose trust as it is to gain it. You know, you can put out these conspiracy theories and immediately gain the trust of people who want to hear that, who believe it already. On the other hand, you can put out truth, and if you're too late in getting that truth out, you've already lost. You've already lost those people who believe something entirely different. So the only way you can get a handle on stories like that, and they did a big disservice by not coming out sooner and saying this is what happened. They waited about a week, I think, the coroner and local police out there to address these claims. That was absolutely the worst thing to do. If you don't know something, come out and say you don't know it, and that you'll get back to people when you do. But this idea of being silent and somehow you can be silent and a week from now come out and say it's not true, people aren't going to believe that. You've got to work faster. I mean, you can put out a breaking news story on TV and the internet in a matter of minutes. You've got to work so much faster when you're facing that. You know, so as far as what happened with Michael Hastings, I don't think we're going to know for a while. But it's important that journalists stay on top of it so that we eventually do find out. Because if we start to be complacent with certain ideas, then nobody's ever going to be held accountable for it if, in fact, something did happen, which it could have. Hopefully that makes sense. I think your microphone is muted again. Or maybe my call prompt.
All right. So, Matthew, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Sorry about that. So what I want to do is take a little break. Here's some Velvet Underground. And on the other side, we'll take some calls. You mind fielding a few calls?
Yeah, sure.
All right, cool. So we'll be back after these messages from Velvet Underground with our guest, Matthew Keys. If you want to join us, it's 347-826-7667. Of course, I'm playing all Lou Reed material tonight because of the passing of Lou Reed at the age of 71 today. What an amazing American gem. Lou Reed is certainly well entrenched in the annals of rock and roll history and Americana. So this song is, of course, probably the most signature song. And as we get ready to take calls, I think it's appropriate as well, because God knows who's going to call in and ask what. So without any further ado, we're going to take a walk on the wild side and be right back.
Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked her way across USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She says, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey, honey, take a walk on the wild side. On the island, in the back room, she was everybody's darling. But she never lost her head, even when she was given head. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go do 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 do. show, never once gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey Joe, take a walk on the wild side. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey sugar, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Alright. Ha. Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was Jim Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that fashion. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, doo 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 doo.
Broadcasting live from the Bay to Bombay, back to the BK and down to LA, it's Mega Show with your host, Vince in the Bay. Give us a call, bitches. 347-826-7667. And now, back to Mega Show.
Here they come. Here they come. Here they come. That's right. The callers are on their way. Okay. Vince back up in this. We have a half hour left. We're going to take phone calls now with my guest tonight, Matthew Keyes. Matthew is a journalist who is currently following a lot of Bay Area-based news stories. We've been discussing some of them this evening. And I think you've heard, if you've been following along, you kind of know what's going on, and if you want to ring a ding and pick Matthew's brain here about any of the things we discussed, feel free to do so. We're going to bring Matthew back on now, and thank you, Matthew, for being patient there. Hey, Matthew, I meant to ask, unfortunately tonight I'm dedicating all the music to Lou Reed, but normally I would ask my guest to curate the music for the evening. I would normally ask for a couple of musical selections, and I'm just curious, what kind of music do you like? Like, what would your selections be?
That's
pretty eclectic musical palette. I kind of listen to everything. Gosh, you put me on the spot. I couldn't think of.
All right, dude. How about this? You got iTunes, right? What's like in heavy rotation your iTunes right now?
You know what's funny is I don't have anything in iTunes right now because I listen to so much radio. I listen to a lot of
talk radio and stuff.
Not even talk radio, but I have an app on my phone called TuneIn, which is a very popular broadcast aggregator. You can listen to radio stations from around the world. And I've been listening to a lot of Australian radio, which sounds weird until you listen to it. And, you know, the first time you hear Australian hip-hop, it blows your mind. It's really weird. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all I was doing.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. We're going to go to the phone lines. I'm going to bring Sicko back. Welcome back, Sicko.
Thank you.
And we're going to take some calls here. There's quite a few people lined up. Speaking of musical artists, we have our good friend, our resident hip-hop artist, Nigger Christ. Nigger Christ, welcome to the show.
Oh, man, the craziest thing just happened to me.
What happened, dude?
So I was walking down the road going to get the mail. I hear this tire screech, and this car pulls up next to me. And this guy gets out. He has a gun. And he gets out of the car. He says, he has his gun. He's coming at me. I start running back to my house. I keep running down the road around the block. I think I'm safe. But then I trip and I fall, and he's right there behind me. He points that gun to my head. He pulls the trigger. I hear a bang. And then I'm suddenly at my desk. I woke up because this show put me to sleep.
Cool story, bro.
347-826-7667 is the number. We're going to go back to the phone lines. And Robert Boner, you're on with Matthew Keys. What's up?
Ladies and gentlemen, I am anti-religion. I am against religion because I am anti-Jesus. Fuck Jesus.
Yeah.
Religion.
Yeah.
I am against gays.
And I am racist. Damn it. Have a good night.
Okay. Thanks for coming out. Appreciate the call. Let's go now to Compulsion Jane. Compulsion Jane, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? It's been a while.
I know. It's been a long while. Thanks for calling in. You're on with Matthew Keys and Anon Sicko. What did you want to chime in about?
Well, I have a few things. First, I love Matthew. Like, everything that he says, I think, is spot on. When he was talking about, like, journalists and reporters, I think it's pretty easy to compare to a square is always a rhombus, and a rhombus is not always a square, whereas journalists are always reporters, but reporters aren't always journalists. And as for the whole, like, talking about copyright stuff, like with him and Sicko, hi, Sicko, by the way.
Hi.
They need to do more research. Like, a lot of reporters these days will just put out things that they find, whether it be on social media or from other, you know, news sites. They will just report them without actually researching the facts. And that's kind of fucking pathetic. What else was I going to comment on? The music, love Lou Reed. He reminds me of Bob Dylan, who we all know that I love. Yeah, I think the whole rhombus and square thing is a pretty accurate assessment of journalism and reporters these days. And hello, Nigger Christ.
Hey, rhombus, did you mean rectangle?
No, a square is always a rhombus.
Okay,
rhombus, you confused
me for a second, because I thought he said rectangle earlier. I don't know.
No,
leave me alone.
Rhombus.
I'm watching the Cowboy game.
Yeah, this is not a geography course. I'm afraid we're not
geometry.
Different show.
No, geometry.
Whatever, geography, geometry, same difference.
But no, it's a really good analogy, and fuck you for not getting it.
Yeah, you touched upon something that I thought was really interesting, which was, you know, reporters need to kind of slow down and spend a little more time doing some research on stuff that they find online. You know, to be fair to a lot of the journalists that you see on TV, you know, even in print and on digital and radio, the way news organizations used to operate is a lot of news organizations used to have research teams, and they were responsible for looking at a piece of media or looking at a piece of information and fleshing it out. And what's happened over the past 15, 20 years is a lot of those investigative and research teams have gone away. Some of the big news organizations
right.
still have them. The network news organizations still have them. But they're really hard to find on the local level. So you have reporters that are trying to, you know, a lot of these reporters, they file for a morning show, an afternoon show, an evening show, and a late night show. And what winds up happening is they're so pressed against the clock that a lot of this stuff falls through. And the solution to that, and so it's not entirely the reporter's fault, although eventually, you know, the blame rests on their shoulders at the end of the day. But when you go back and you look at...
I'm out.
Wait a second, dude. oh, man, Matthew, I hate to tell you this. I should have, this is my bad, partly shame on me. I like to preface my show by explaining some of the ground rules. And there's not a lot of rules, but the pillars of this fascist broadcast that I put on here on Blog Talk Radio every night are four things, okay? Number one, we do not use the L word. And the L word is literally, I don't care if you use it wrong or correct, I hate that word. It's pretty much worthless. You can pretty much say anything and remove literally, and it will make just as much, if not more, sense. So there's rule number one, literally. You cannot say the word literally. You get timeout. Number two, no shout-outs. We don't do shout-outs. Shout-outs jumped the shark like 4 years ago when grandparents at bar mitzvahs were giving shout-outs, okay? Number three, in terms of, we do not use that term, in terms of, that means nothing. It's stupid. It's filler. You know how many talking heads? You could do a drinking game and watch like a Fox News roundtable and just drink every time they say in terms of or at the end of the day. And that brings me to number four, which is at the end of the day. So are you telling me that this only occurs at the end of the day? Like it doesn't happen in the morning. It's not there at lunchtime. But at the end of the day, suddenly it shows up. I don't believe that. Like, people will say stuff like, you know, at the end of the day, we're all just human, aren't we? No. At the beginning of the day, when we wake up, we're human. Throughout the course of the morning and into the afternoon, we are still human. And, yes, you're correct. At the end of the day, we are also human. Okay? So those are my four pillars. I don't care. You can say nigger, shit, bitch, Jesus Christ, nigger Christ, Jew, faggot. I don't care. Just don't say those four things.
Fair point.
So, yeah. Hello?
I'm still here.
Okay. I didn't put you on mute, but you were quiet for 2 minutes while you listened to that, so that's your punishment. I want to interject here, though. I have a little bone to pick with you, Mr. Matthew Keyes, with, Mr. I know all about how to handle sources and not jump to conclusions.
Mm.
I have a little bit of a bone to pick with you. This week...
It's going to get real.
This week, you tweeted out that Doxbin had been doxed as three teenagers in Finland. And I was surprised because, to be honest, I talked to Nakash. I've known him for a long time. I'm pretty sure he's not three teenagers from Finland. I'm almost positive. That being said, I was like, okay, all right, hey, I'll take a look. Your source, I'm not going to say her name because on this program, due to the fact that she wants to defame me, I'm sorry.
Can I say it?
What? No, you can't say it. I'm going to say it. No, she whose name we shall not say, but I'll say it one time.
Can I say it?
Go ahead, just say it.
Basco.
All right. I hope you know by now, Sue Basco is not the most reliable of sources. I wouldn't put any credence into anything that woman puts up on her blog. She has accused me. She has accused me of defaming her on my show, not because I say anything, but because I have people come on, trolls, mostly, you know, Russell League trolls come on here, and they're like her number one target. So they come on. I have an open line show. It's freedom of speech here, unless you don't say those four things. And so whatever, they wanted to voice their opinion on a Sue Basco woman who was terrorizing them or vice versa. And she said, I was hosting a hate radio and, you know, my show promotes death threats and all this blah, blah, blah. And she said that she reported me, she wrote this letter and allegedly reported me to the FBI, the FCC and Blog Talk Radio. And she alleges in this that I'm harassing her, blah, blah, blah. And within the body of the article, she refers to me as a convicted felon, which is not correct. I am a convicted, yes, I am a cyber criminal, but I am not a felon. I have a misdemeanor on my record. That's it. And
she once passed around a story saying that I was a pedophile.
Yeah,
yep.
This woman
circulated by a troll.
Oh man, she's this woman needs help more than anything.
Yeah.
So just a fair warning, vet sources, especially if they have the name Basco on them.
Yeah, I'll respond with, you know, I'll be one of the first. That should be another idiom that we do away with. One of the first, you know. I will readily admit that there are times on Twitter, Facebook, even, you know, on blogs, when information that I've been given from people has turned out to be wrong. And in that circumstance, what you have to do is go back and correct it. And, you know, when I don't know very much about, how do I put it, sort of internet culture, I guess is how I would say. I don't know very much about sort of cyber culture. I'm finding out a lot about it now, not really by choice. There's a lot about this stuff that I just don't know. And so when I see a story that I think is interesting that somebody passes along to me, I'll pass it along out. But I have the responsibility, just as I was saying before, I have the responsibility of having to go back and correct that if it turns out to be wrong. In this case, I really don't know very much about the story. It was passed on to me. I thought it was interesting, so I put it out. But as it turns out, it raised some questions, not just with you, but I heard from a couple of people who it raised questions, about. And it's not just that story. It's other stories. And what I do there is I kind of reexamine it, and I find out some more information about what's going on. And that helps me make better decisions
down the
road.
In some ways it's like throwing spaghetti at the wall, see what sticks. And sometimes it's not such a bad thing if you put something out there that's erroneous or partly erroneous, because then you do the feedback and you can update, you can correct. I mean, that's part of the game. You're essentially crowdsourcing a patchwork of information, and, you know, you might have a good solid chunk of it, but might be missing a few pieces. And that's what's great about Twitter, is you can throw it out there and instantly people will just jump on you and be like, no, this is wrong. You got to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I think that helps the reporting ultimately.
Okay, but for Matthew here, he's talking about, like, respectable journalism, like, he should have maybe researched that before he tweeted it.
Well, no, I mean, I can definitely see what happens there. I retweet a lot of things, and that turn out to be false.
I mean, I get it, too. But if we're talking about, like, respectful journalism, like, and research before you say something, like, you should research that kind of shit.
Every tweet that somebody like Matthew tweets out isn't necessarily he's not necessarily reporting on it. If he tweets about his dinner, you know, that's not reporting. And I'm not saying Matthew's
the
kind of person.
But if he's tweeting a story on somebody, maybe know the facts. But I love Matthew.
Right,
everything that he says so far is brilliant. Like, I love him. But if we're talking about respectable journalism and researching and criticizing the fact that that reporters don't research, maybe do that.
There's a difference between reporting on something and tweeting out something somebody else showed you, and you were like, "Hey, that's interesting." And like you said, if he goes back if he goes back and corrects it afterwards, then no harm, no foul.
Well, wait. Did he correct it?
I don't know.
I didn't people jumped on me almost the second that it was put out. Two, it was a story that generated so little interest that it wasn't worth going back and saying this was inaccurate. And I don't know if it was inaccurate. I have people telling me that they say it's a bad source and that they think it's inaccurate. To your point, the story wasn't researched. It was something that I read and seemed interesting, so I put it out there. But there were questions after the fact as to whether or not what was in it was right. And people, I think, had some legitimate concerns about the sources. And there was enough of the people out there that were saying they were concerned about the source that it was walked back. And what that does for me is that helps me figure out, are there sources that, you know, I want to lean more on or I want to pull back a little bit from? And as far as she goes, I don't know very much about her. I hear different things from different people, and then I kind of have to make a judgment. And what people, and that's something that I do in every case, and what people have to do then is they've got to look at the stuff that I'm putting out and the sources that I use and figure out if I'm somebody that they want to follow, if they think I'm credible, if they think I'm accurate. And if the answer is no, then they need to get their news from somewhere else. But if their answer is yes, then what they need to do is do exactly what everybody did, which is send me criticism and say, this is a source that we don't think is accurate. This is a source who has done this. And I had no idea that any of this stuff was going on. I mean, this story was not worth taking an hour out of my day to Google on, because most of the people that follow me, they don't care. They don't care about this kind of stuff. It's just something that I find interesting.
Okay. I get that. I get what you're saying. But you call yourself a journalist, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're going to retweet a story that is a news story about people, but then you qualify its relevance based on the amount of criticism you get from it,
journalism. I don't know if that's necessarily a news story. It's a blog. It's somebody posting something.
He's qualifying the complaints based on how many complaints he gets. Like, that really doesn't matter.
You should really focus
on facts.
No, he qualified it on the amount of interest it had, not on the amount of complaints it had.
Okay, the amount of it, regardless, you should really only put out things that you can stand behind. And it shouldn't matter about the amount of interest if you're a really serious journalist.
Yes, you're right. I think that's 100% correct. When you move something on Twitter or Facebook or it doesn't even matter if it's somebody else's work or somebody else's reporting, if you're rebroadcasting that, whether or not you have a disclaimer saying that it's not endorsed, your name is on that and you're informing people, or in this case, maybe misinforming people.
Yep.
That's your responsibility. And so the way I remedied that is to walk it back, is to take a step back and say, you know what? There are questions about this. I don't know. I'll admit, I don't know very much about the subject. So was it a mistake to put out? Yes. it happened. And so what I have to do going forward is listen to the kind of feedback that you're giving me and saying, this is what we're going to do, you know, and this is the decision that I've made. And if you, again, it goes back to if you think that the sources that I use or the information that I put out is wrong, and plenty of people thought that the story I did on Michael Hastings was wrong, but I stand behind it. I couldn't stand behind the tweet that I put out because I felt there were legitimate questions being raised as to the accuracy of it. As far as the stuff that went on in Boston that I received a lot of criticism for, the tweeting the scanner, I stand behind all of that because it was appropriately sourced and the information in most cases turned out to be right. In some cases, it turned out to be wrong and it was corrected. But, you know, scanner traffic is something that law enforcement agencies use to get information between one person and another or between dispatchers and an officer. So it's generally considered to be credible. You shouldn't report it as fact, but you should report it in sources. In this case, you know, it's sort of the same idea. I moved a piece of material that somebody else was reporting. It was inherently sourced in the fact that it was linked to the original source. People came to me and said, on a topic I didn't know very much about, they had questions about not only the integrity of the facts, but also the integrity of the source. And I made the decision, you know, within a couple of minutes, really, to walk the tweet back and, you know, to not repeat it. And going forward, I have to consider whether or not information that's put out by that source is credible. You know, was it a mistake to put out? Yes, it was a mistake to put out. But in saying that, it's not the same as saying that reporters don't research because of time constraints. In this case, it was a story that seemed to be fleshed out. I read it before I tweeted it. And I didn't have any concerns about the source because I didn't know very much about her. And I get your concern. Your concern is that, well, you should have researched more about it. If you didn't know about the topic, you should have researched it. I placed inherent trust in a source that I had communicated with for months, not knowing a backstory. And the only way I found out about that story was to tweet it. So was it a mistake? Yeah. But in a way, it's almost good that it happened because I learned something new and gained a new perspective that otherwise I wouldn't have gotten. I mean, most people probably didn't know that I was communicating with that person. Now they do, and they're able to give me a different perspective on that person. I don't know if what everybody is saying is true. Again, I haven't really looked into it. But now I have enough knowledge to say, you know what, this isn't worth the trouble.
Yeah, it's not worth the trouble. You trust me, it's not worth the trouble. And we got 5 minutes to go, or less than 5 minutes to go. We got to wrap this up here. So I'm going to bring on the final callers. We're going to go around the horn, give people's final thoughts, and then we're going to peace out. Amanda, you're on with Matthew Keys. What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to chime in. When talking about a retweet and the misinformation or disinformation or whatever, what's wrong with, even though you know it's maybe like a not 100% reliable source, but as a journalist, wouldn't you like to be able to present a different perspective knowingly that's going to garner attention and maybe just open up dialogue and conversation to something that might not be 100% correct, but that way to garner, you know, actual accurate facts instead of having that layer of not quite knowing exactly what's going on? Like, wouldn't you rather have it out in the open and get it figured out than, you know, kind of shoving it back under the rug and waiting for another day?
Sure. Well, I think there's, you know, there are certainly topics where presenting multiple opinions and perspectives is a good thing. You know, I think we're doing that now with this NSA surveillance. We certainly know what's being presented as fact, and now we can have a discussion around it where you get more opinion, and you should want to present those perspectives so that people can make an informed decision. With this story that they had an issue with, the issue that they had was not that there was another perspective, it's that a story was being passed on as fact, and there were some serious questions as to the validity and the accuracy of the information in that story. And so in that case, it wasn't so much an issue of perspective, it was an issue of fact. And because there were those issues raised, the tweet was walked back, and I think the story was even walked back at some point. So there's certainly want to put out information that's correct so that you can get those perspectives that are built on correct information. You shouldn't put out information that's erroneous, hoping to start a dialogue, as some news organizations do, including one big cable news organization, you know, simply for the purpose of creating dialogue, because it's, what's going to happen is you're going to have a dialogue around something that's not accurate, and it may have an outcome that in some cases could be very dangerous. So, yes, you want to present multiple perspectives, but no, you don't want to throw out erroneous information for the sake of having a discussion.
Right on. Hey, let's take another call. Vert, you're on.
Oh, yeah. So you finally fucking let me on there, faggot. What the fuck?
And nothing.
Yeah,
you're
Keys
on.
Guy,
you're on.
He's just shut off. Yeah, no, this Keys guy just wasted fucking 2 hours of my life. He sounds like a fucking 12-year-old, and he has no idea what he's fucking talking about. What the fuck, Vince? I've been sitting here on hold for a fucking hour.
Was it worth it?
Yeah, Keys, dude. Grow some balls. Fucking actually do research, because you have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. Will you, please?
So you waited an hour on the phone to say that?
Yeah. I've been waiting an hour, because, yeah, that is fucking bullshit. Copyright? You want people to pay for information? Are you fucking serious?
Yeah. That's why I spent 2 hours on the phone talking about it.
Yeah, well, that's bullshit. Information should be free. So, I'm sorry. People like you need to fucking die and definitely not reproduce.
Well, I spent 2 hours on the phone saying that...
You don't have any kids, do you?
I spent 2 hours on the phone talking about journalism as a public service, and I spent 2 hours saying that you can have an opinion on copyright, but you shouldn't feel like your opinion on copyright prevents you from taking action against somebody who violates the copyright that you inherently have. Say that I was pro or anti-copyright.
There is no inherent fucking copyright. Information should be free. There is no inherent copyright, dude.
Well, legally there is inherent copyright, but you're making an argument on a perspective that never came up. We never discussed whether or not information...
Well, yeah, Vince wouldn't let me on the fucking line.
Okay, well, you're
yeah,
here now.
Well, you know what, Bert, there were quite a few other callers ahead of you. I pretty much do
that
in New York.
I was the first one in the fucking chat room.
yeah, there was quite a few callers lined up before I got to you. So I just go down the line, man. It's okay. You're on now. You know, you can... Go for
it. Yeah. Over time, you don't want to hurt your own ego. Don't worry.
What, man? You know what? More people listen to this after the fact as a podcast in its entirety than listen to it live. I honestly get probably on average, I don't know, maybe a little over 100 live listeners on average. But ultimately, each podcast will like double, triple, quadruple that ultimate, you know, down the line. So more people listen to it in this long 3 hour extended.
I know,
form.
But they're not going to listen to the 2 hours of this 12-year-old going on about I don't even know anymore. Like
actually,
you
know, it's too bad that you weren't satisfied with the content of tonight's show.
Oh, stop it! You know me better.
I don't know where you were misled. I mean, the show says Matthew Keys guest, so it's kind
yeah,
of the Matthew Keys
think
show.
You're a fucking 12-year-old, and look at your Twitter feed, dude. I'm not the only one that was falling asleep while he was blabbing about copyright on news stories.
Well, you know, maybe this just isn't the demographic that you fit into, and that's okay.
Oh, God. Are you trying to get in his pants? Don't lie.
Are you accusing me of being a fluffer? We all know I only fluff for the Russell League, okay?
Oh, I know you're a brony and probably a furry, too.
I'm not a brony. Okay, let's get this straight right now. I'm not a brony. I have, yes, I am in a holy jihad against the ninjas on the internet. And I have formed a coalition, and yes, we've reached out to the brony community. We've set our differences aside. We have a common enemy, and we've also we're working on including the Juggalos as well. So we feel like we're going to
not a fan of Juggalos.
We have the Pirates. We have the Pirates on our side too. Pirates are like the ninjas
of
the enemies.
Oh fuck no! We love Pirates, and I'm a ninja, so.
Whatever.
This is by far the weirdest, like the weirdest show I think I've ever been on. As far as the
oh, latest. Shut up, 12-year-old.
It's amusing.
Up.
Yeah, well, it's late night internet radio with open lines, and I just kind of let people go with it. I let the callers dictate the conversation, and
oh,
you know, I try to keep the show on the rails, but ultimately, once the phone lines open up, you know, it's just mayhem.
That's all right. I mean, his argument is nobody's going to listen to 2 hours of this, but he just said he spent an hour on the phone listening to it. And it's like, dude, if you think there's something better out there for your attention, you know, to put your attention on, focus on that. You know, watch a movie or a TV show or you know, I think football's still on. There's other things that you can dedicate your – I don't understand people that criticize something that they spend 2 hours watching or listening to. You've got other choices. You can listen to the radio. You can watch TV. You can tune into another show. This show will be on.
You can watch TV.
This show will be on in a couple of days. You can call in then and talk to somebody even more interesting. But the question
All right. I think we get it. We get it. There's options, Dirt. There's options. Look into them, bro. Okay. We got to get some more callers. Speaking of somebody who's been very patient, expired Scooby Snack. Scooby Snack, you're on the air with my guest, Matthew Keys. What's up?
Well, let me just tell you that at the end of the day, I am literally going to kill myself. That is all I can now amass. I don't even know what I experienced.
2 minutes. 2 minutes. Expired Scooby Snack for violating pretty much all four of the pillars of this broadcast's rules. So, 2 minutes. All right, let's move on. Compulsion Jane, you're back.
Yeah, hi. I'm struggling with the whole, like, Matthew Keys wanting to be, like, a serious journalist, but, like, saying he's okay with retweeting stories he hasn't researched. Like, that bothers me a little bit. But other than that, like, but I agree with Vert on a lot of things, too. And also, Matthew, I agreed with a lot of things that you said, but you do kind of sound like a brony, and I spend some time talking to bronies because they fascinate me, and you remind me of someone that I've talked to recently. So are you sure you're not a brony?
I have no idea what that is. Like, I never said I was or wasn't.
Someone who watches My Little Pony.
Yeah, no, let me ask you. Do you watch My Little Pony?
No.
Do you dress
children's television show, right?
Do you ever dress up as a pony?
No.
Okay, you're probably not a brony.
Very good.
Okay. Thanks, Compulsion Jane. Let's go, Nigger Christ. Nigger Christ, final thoughts.
Hey, I got a question for that last person, that man, lady, Santa person that wants to talk about the how you're wasting your time. You know, I can do more than one thing at once, right? Like, I'm sitting here listening to this show, waiting for it to get exciting. At the same time, I record me a new freestyle. I've been hanging a tie chain. I'm masturbating a picture of Matthew Key's sister. I can do a lot of things. I'm a black messiah. I'm the best rapper alive.
Okay. Thanks, Nigger Christ. Appreciate the call. And I think that's going to do it. Amanda, did you get your final thoughts in?
No, I'm good. You guys cracked me up.
All right. Well, thanks for coming out. I appreciate the call. And last but not least, our guest for the night, Matthew Keys, thank you for sticking it out. Any final parting thoughts you'd like to leave us before we end the show?
It was good talking to everybody. It got a little bizarre towards the end, but other than that, this has been great. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. It was great to have you, and you're welcome back anytime. I will definitely be continuing to follow your exploits on Twitter. If you folks listening want to follow Matthew, he goes by Matthew Keys Live on Twitter. And and I go by Vince in the Bay on Twitter. That's twitter.com/Vince in the Bay. This has been a fantastical broadcast. I'm thinking the next big broadcast is going to probably be, I think it's going to be for sure on Friday. Friday is looking Ninja Show. As you know, I auctioned off an opportunity to let somebody host my show and totally take it over, and the Ninjas won. So on Friday, it's going to be an all-Ninja broadcast. They are going to take over the show. It's basically going to be Ninjas in the Bay, and it should be fun. I don't know what they have planned, but we'll see. It should be interesting. My white ninja, I think my Yeti ninja, and my Latino ninja, and I think Barfy ninja are all slated to be participating, and God knows what other ninjas will show up. But yeah, and also I'm going to try to squeeze in, hopefully this week, a show dedicated to the Free Hammond campaign to get supporters, help supporters cover traveling costs for going to New York City to support Jeremy in his sentencing, which is happening on November 15th. And yours truly, Vince in the Bay, will be there to cover it. Hopefully I'll do a broadcast while I'm out there to highlight it. So watch out for that. Also, October 31st, Halloween, PayPal 14, back in court in San Jose. I will be there as well covering the festivities and reporting it back here on my broadcast and my bloggity blog. So that's it, everybody. Thanks for coming out. Once again, thank you to my guest tonight, Matthew Keys. That was a fantastic conversation with him tonight. And I'm going to leave you all with one more track from the late, the great Lou Reed. This is from the soundtrack to one of my favorite independent films from the 90s that was shot. It's like a wacky comedy, all-star comedy set in Brooklyn, starring people like Harvey Keitel, Jim Jarmusch, Roseanne Barr, Michael J. Fox, Giancarlo Esposito, who else? There's a lot of people. Malik Yoba's in it. There's a lot of people in it. It's pretty crazy. Oh, RuPaul is in it. Madonna's in it. Mira Sorvino's in it. I think, did I say Harvey Keitel? Harvey Keitel's in it. There's a lot of familiar faces in that film. It's kind of like an ensemble comedy mixed with like documentary footage from Brooklyn. It's great. Oh, Keith David makes an appearance as Jackie Robinson, the ghost of Jackie Robinson. And, yeah, that's it. So, yeah, Lou Reed actually is in the film, too. I tweeted out his part. He did, like, a monologue for the film about Brooklyn and his glasses. You should definitely check it out. But he also did a song for the soundtrack. And as we round things off here, I'm going to play that song from that soundtrack in the 90s by Lou Reed. I'm kind of excited to go to New York City to be out there for the Hammond thing. And listening to these Lou Reed songs today got me kind of fired up for being back in New York. And I'm definitely going to get egg cream when I'm out there. And, of course, I'm going to play this song by Lou Reed off of the Blue in the Face soundtrack. This is Egg Cream. Good night, everybody. I love you. VITB for life.
Young man, no bigger than this. A chocolate egg cream was not too near this. Some you bet chocolate syrup, just the water mixed with milk. Stir it up into a head, it froze, tasted just like milk. You scream, I steam, we don't want egg cream.
feel very nice.